Welcome back, Hemingway listeners, to the Hemingway List. It's the first of winter. The first of winter over here. Oh, actually, it's just ticked over to the second of winter. But today was the first day of winter, and oh my god, it's so cold. How does the world just know that it's winter now, time to be freezing, and then it's just freezing all of a sudden? I mean, it's been cold here for a few months, but today was just like, it just turned it up a notch in the cold, miserable winteriness level. Anyway, I didn't do any exercise today as well. Didn't do a single bit of exercise. It was bloody excellent because I haven't had a rest day, as us gym junkies call it. You know, the type. I haven't had a rest day for a few weeks, so much needed. I'll get back into it tomorrow, though. Back on the old elliptical. And I did a big cleanup. A big clean of my house. I did all the washing, all the floors, dishes, bathroom. All the rest. A lot of cleaning. So, that was what I did today. Isolation update for you. We're talking about Book 1, Chapter 9 today. What was Stendhal hinting at here with the portrait of Napoleon? And how dangerous are these flirtations for Julian if he gets caught by Monsieur Renal? Was there a hint at him, not with the little hidden portrait, but before that, was there a hint of him masturbating? Was that what happened there early in that chapter? I'm pretty sure that was what it was getting at. And then, so it hinted at that, and then later in the chapter it hinted, oh no, he said, oh, you can't find what's under my bed, it's a portrait, if anyone finds it, I'm screwed. And I think the reader was supposed to think, well, he just did a cheeky masturbate. He did a cheeky little masturbate. So is the portrait the object of his affection and he's going to be embarrassed or potentially incriminated? Not in the criminal sense, but as in like he'll be kind of caught red-handed of who he's been desiring if they find this portrait. And then, twist, it turns out to be a portrait of Napoleon. I think it was meant to be a bit of a joke there in the way the story was told. I think. I'm trying to find the bit right now. Can't find it. Anyway, I'm not going to find it now that I'm looking for it. So, who cares? Anyway, is that what happened? Is that what happened? Let's have a read of the comments. Techrific said, very good point on the impact that Napoleon had on individuals, but I think it's linked to Rousseau because it refers to the impact that Rousseau had on Napoleon. Dear Rousseau, why was it necessary that you have lived only for 60 years for the interest of the virtue you had to be immortal? This was written by the young artillery lieutenant Bonaparte at the beginning of the French Revolution. Rousseau would continue to have a great influence on Napoleon for the rest of his life. I feel like I need to know more about Rousseau. Maybe. And I bet you're absolutely right, Techrific, because you seem to know a lot more about this than I do. Laura Y. Stitch said, are they flirtations? He becomes obsessed with an idea and has to carry it through. He's acting like he's in love with Madame Renal, but he doesn't seem to feel like that at all. The fact he has a portrait suggests he's in love with someone, but it turns out to be Napoleon. More obsession. This guy doesn't know how to have interpersonal relationships. Our Treat said, this was striking to me as well. While obviously Julian has a physical slash sensual attraction towards Madame de Renal, in the way he approaches it, he is much less focused on the feelings of romance and affection and even lust, and much more focused on the acquisition of getting what he wants, fixated on an outcome he has predetermined is right for him based on misguided notions of duty and honor. It's more like a game he is playing with himself than with her. Epigraph. Strombeck was a German friend of Stendhal, and here is the painting. Okay, I'm going to look at this painting. What is this painting? Oh, it's quite pretty. Looks very, I want to say Roman or Greek. I don't know. A lady holding what looks like it's supposed to be a child, but looks more like just a mini human. A lady looking over her shoulder and some kind of like prince looking man with a hat. I don't know what that's depicting. Our Treat said, I feel bad for Madame de Renal and I hate that we don't know her first name yet. Although I suppose we don't know Monsieur de Renal's first name either. In fact, it seems nearly every character besides Julian is referred to by their last name almost exclusively, with the exception of the children he tutors. As I was saying, I feel bad for Madame de Renal because while she experiences Julian's actions as flirtations and is receptive to them on that ground, he enjoys them on that ground, finds happiness in them on that ground, etc., Julian seems to view it solely from the aspect of the conquest. Madame de Renal's experience of it and Julian seems worlds apart. She likely assumes the impulse that is driving him is affection, when it's really the opposite. He doesn't seem to view his behavior as flirtatious or romantic, or he views them as romantic, but only in the sense that he is playing out something romantic, a romantic notion, something idealized and archetypal, not in the sense that he is experiencing an internal romantic romance, loving feeling that is moving him to amorous behavior himself. And here I am reminded of poor Emma Bovary, fingers crossed for a better end for Julian. Madame de Renal, believing the portrait to be of Julian's love interest, not too far off, winky face. Non-creative handle says, I'm starting to wonder if Madame de Renal is a conquest for Julian, similar to how several battles were to Napoleon. Holding her hand is like a battle that Julian has won, not because he cares for her, but because he wants to prove that he can do it and assert his dominance. Cannot wait until these two are caught. It seems the only thing that impacts Julian is the thought of tarnishing his reputation. At this point, I don't know if anyone would want to bring him into their home if there was the imminent threat of him stealing his master's wife. Unless, of course, Madame de Renal is solely blamed. Yep. Okay, I think we're ready to read the next chapter. I'm just looking for this thing again. I'm not going to find it. Okay, let's just keep moving. Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look on schmoop.com. The Red and the Black. What are we reading? Chapter 9. I'm going to recap Chapter 9 and see what it says. Come on. Julian sits down with Madame de Renal and her friend one evening, Madame Deville. When he's sure that Deville can't see, he reaches out and holds Madame Renal's hand. She pulls away, but he grabs it again. When Madame Deville asks to head back inside the house, Madame de Renal says she'd like to stay out so she can keep holding Julian's hand. Julian hardly sleeps that night and sleeps in until noon the next day. When he comes downstairs, he gets chewed out by a newly returned Monsieur de Renal. The boss isn't happy that Julian has wasted the entire morning without teaching anything to the children. While walking with Madame de Renal, Julian learns that Monsieur de Renal is going to have all the mattresses in the house restuffed. Okay, so it's in that scene when he sleeps until noon. All right, that was when I thought that it was some kind of a euphemism. Oh yeah, this bit, here we go. The next day he woke at 5. What would have been cruel for Madame de Renal, had she known it, gave her scarcely a thought. He had done his duty, a heroic duty. Filled with the warmth of this sentiment, he locked himself in his room and gave himself over with totally new pleasure to studying the exploits of his hero. When the bell for lunch made itself heard, he had forgotten all his gains of the previous evening, blah, blah, blah. That was the bit where I was like, is that hinting what I think it's hinting? I could be wrong. I'm often am. All right, let's read chapter 10. A great heart and a little fortune. Let me see how long chapter 10 is. Oh, it's short. Okay, let's rock and roll. But passion most dissembles, yet betrays, even by its darkness, as the blackest sky foretells the heaviest tempest. Don Juan, Canto 1, Stanza 73. Classic stanza. Monsieur de Renal, who was proceeding through all the rooms in the chateau, returned to the one belonging to the children, accompanied by the servants carrying mattresses back. The sudden entry of this man was for Julien that drop of water which makes the vase overflow. Even more pale, and even more somber than usual, he darted towards Monsieur de Renal. Monsieur de Renal stopped and glanced at his servants. Monsieur, said Julien, do you imagine that if you had had any other tutor, your children would have made the same progress as they have with me? If you can only answer no, continued Julien, without giving Monsieur de Renal a chance to reply, how dare you reproach me for neglecting them? Monsieur de Renal no sooner recovered from his fright than he concluded from the unusual tone taken by the young peasant that he had in his pocket some advantageous offer and was going to leave him. Julien's anger mounted as he spoke. I can live without you, Monsieur, he added. I'm truly sorry to find you so upset, answered Monsieur de Renal, stuttering a little. The servants were 10 paces away, busy arranging the beds. That's not enough for me, Monsieur Julien, now beside himself, retorted. Think of this shameful language you've used to me, and in front of the ladies, too. Monsieur de Renal knew only too well what Julien was asking, and a painful conflict tore his soul. Then it chanced that Julien, in effect, mad with anger, cried, I know where to go, Monsieur, when I leave you. At this announcement, Monsieur de Renal had a vision of Julien installed at Monsieur Valenod's place. Very well, Monsieur, he said in a moment, with a sigh, and an air like the one he might have adopted when calling in a surgeon for a major operation. I accede to your request. Counting from the day after tomorrow, which is the first of the month, I will give you 50 francs a month. Julien felt a desire to laugh, and stood amazed. All his anger had vanished. I haven't despised this brute sufficiently, he said to himself. That's undoubtedly the finest apology so base a nature can make. The children, who had listened to this scene with open mouths, dashed into the garden to tell their mother that Monsieur Julien was really angry, but that he was going to have 50 francs a month. Julien followed them out of habit, without even a look at Monsieur de Renal, whom he left in a state of profound irritation. That's 168 francs, said the mayor to himself, that Monsieur Valenod has cost me. Assuredly, I must have a couple of words with him about his plans for supplying the foundlings. An instant later, Julien was back face to face with Monsieur de Renal. I have a matter of conscience to discuss with Monsieur Chelan. I have the honour to inform you that I shall be absent for some hours. Ah, my dear Julien, said Monsieur de Renal, laughing most insincerely, take the whole day if you wish, and the whole day tomorrow, my good friend. Take the gardener's horse to get to Verrières. There he goes, said Monsieur de Renal to himself, to give Valenod an answer. He hasn't promised me anything, but you have to let young hotheads cool off. Julien quickly escaped and climbed up into the great woods, through which one can go from Vergy to Verrieres. He had no wish to arrive at Monsieur Chaland's house immediately. Far from wanting to subject himself to a fresh scene of hypocrisy, he needed to see clearly into his own heart and to listen intently to the throng of feelings that disturbed it. I won a battle, he said to himself, as soon as he saw that he was in the woods and out of sight. So, I've won a battle. The word painted his whole position for him in a brave light and endowed his soul with a measure of calm. Here am I with 50 francs salary a month. Monsieur de Renal must have been properly frightened, but what of? This meditation on what could have frightened a happy and powerful man against whom an hour previously he had been boiling with rage made Julian's calm complete. He was almost sensitive, for a moment, to the enchanting beauty of the woods through which he strode. Long ago, vast fragments of bare rock had fallen from the mountainside into the midst of the forest. Great beech trees had grown up nearly as high as these rocks, the shade of which produced a delicious freshness from 3 steps from places where the heat of the sun's rays would have made lingering impossible. Julian paused for breath for a moment in the shadow of the great rocks, then resumed his climb, soon by a scarcely distinguishable narrow path used only by goat herds. He found himself standing on top of a huge rock, and satisfied that he was quite isolated from humankind. This physical situation made him smile, for it represented to him the moral situation he burned to attain. The pure air of the high mountains spoke to his soul of serenity, even of joy. The mayor of Verrieres was certainly still, in his eyes, the representative of all the rich and insolent people of an earth. But Julian felt that the hate that had disturbed him, despite the violence of its onset, had nothing personal in it. If he should cease to see Monsieur de Renal, he would have forgotten him in a week or so. Him, his chateau, his dogs, his children, and all his family. I have forced him. I don't know how to make a very great sacrifice. What, more than 50 ukase a year? And only a moment before I had got myself out of the greatest danger. That's 2 victories in one day. The second has no merit. I will have to find out why it happened. But time enough tomorrow for such tedious inquiries. Standing upright on his great rock, Julian contemplated the sky, glowing with the August sun. Cicadas were chirping in the countryside below the rock, and when they ceased, all around him was silence. He could see 20 leagues of country spread out before his feet. From time to time a sparrow hawk from the huge rocks above his head made itself visible, describing its vast circles in silence. Julian's eye automatically followed the bird of prey. Its calm and powerful flight impressed him. He envied that strength. He envied that isolation. It was the destiny of Napoleon. Would it one day be his? Alrighty, there we go. Another chapter down. Good old Julian's just stumbling upon luck after luck. Have your say about this one over at the subreddit. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.